broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I think it's a curious comment given. I think it's pretty safe to say that
it's an interesting thing you do in politics. You stick your neck out.
I don't dispute that $56 million is a lot of money. I don't dispute the merits of the suit, but you had a big press conference. You're coming on CNBC.
Well, as I was walking towards the scene, I just saw two women that were on the ground. And
lesbian, your mom's a lesbian.
Captain Cajones.
World famous, groundbreaking Phil Hendry show every night until 1 a.m. on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show where truth is our bitch. My good friend Glenn Beck is on TV right now. I don't know whether or not Glenn knows this, but Glenn, when you say that it isn't the system, it is the person in charge who is corrupt that's the problem, do you know you sound like a liberal? And when you sound, in other words, you're articulating exactly what was wrong with GM and Chrysler. Anyway,
that's a very good point. You should call up his radio show.
Yeah, I think I will. I'll call him up doing your voice. How about that?
No, you can't.
I might. Bud Dickman with me, along with Robert Leonard. Robert, you going to be with us on the Gospel Jazz Show?
Well, you know, I got invited by Professor Clayton, but he got that other guy there.
Well, I think he wouldn't mind having you there. The Gospel Jazz Hour with Professor Emery Clayton on our website every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. You ought to be watching that. It's not only with Professor Clayton, but he also has EJ and Millie who help him out. But I know that you guys sometimes pop in.
Yeah, I sometimes go in and get a coffee.
Really? Well, I bet you he doesn't like that, man, because he's got to be wide awake.
Yeah, he doesn't miss it.
Sure. 877-876-PHIL. Don't forget, we're on our website right now and every night at philhendryshow.com with live streaming video of the show, as well as our audio downloads every day. So you can listen to the show and watch the show from our website. The next day, you can watch it on demand, and you can download the audio. So I think that's pretty cool. Okay. Story from the Northwest, the great Northwest. That would be Minneapolis, Minnesota. But you didn't think that was the Northwest. Well, it was one time. In fact, when I worked up there, that's what they called it, the Greater Northwest. The great, I don't know. Anyway, don't ask me to explain, but they did. U.S. safety investigators are reviewing a flight by Delta Airlines Northwest unit that overshot its destination at the Minneapolis airport yesterday after losing contact with air traffic controllers. And do you want to know why they lost contact? Because the pilots were in a heated discussion over airline policy. In other words, they were almost in a fist fight there in the cockpit. And they lost situational awareness. In other words, they got lost is what happened. Flying northeast about 150 miles past the airport. They flew past Minneapolis, wherever they were going to land. Were they going to land at the big international airport there? Yeah. I got to tell you something. These cats that fly airlines for a living are not the high-paid guys with the sharp-looking hats and the buttoned-up jackets and the, you know, the scrambled eggs on the shoulders and on the bill as they stride confidently through the airport. You remember when we were kids, we used to see the pilot, and we'd say, wow, that's the pilot, man. Look at that guy, you know. There's the crew. What you're looking at is a guy who may be making about 30 bucks an hour. I'm not kidding, either. Do you know that? You probably do, but It's worth hearing, you know. In other words, I'm not saying anything other than air travel, because of the cost to the company, and because companies have to make money, otherwise there's no point in them being in business. You know, air travel is not the sophisticated experience that one might have thought it was at one time. Now, I don't remember those days when they served food on China. Everybody, even a coach, was eating a meal served on China. I wasn't alive. I don't know what that's about, but I'll tell you this. There's a great airline called Virgin Atlantic and Virgin America, and by God, every seat's got a TV set.
You're going to get in trouble for saying that.
Why?
Because they're going to think you got paid.
I didn't get paid nothing. I ain't going to get paid nothing. I don't want any money. I don't even want a free ticket. I'm just telling you, that's a great airline. Now, I don't know how they do it. I don't know anything about the airline business. All I know is that I've flown it, people have flown it, and it is a beautiful experience. And when you go into the Virgin America gate area there, actually the ticketing area, it even looks like you're walking from one airport into another. I mean, the place has got a different kind of color scheme, and there's a guy standing there. Because you know how it is when you walk up to the ticket counter, you feel like you might as well have landed on another planet sometimes. You don't know what the hell is going on. They got those machines. If you'd like to automatically ticket yourself, yeah, I'd like to automatically ticket myself. I make one false move. I make one wrong move with the wrong credit card, or I didn't put the right thing, anything, man. I got to start all over again. Okay. But you go over to this Virgin America, and there's somebody there. Yes, sir. How's it going? It's I don't know. Well, what do you want to do? Well, I got to get checked in. All right, sir. I'll help you get checked in. Do you want to use the thing here? Do you want to go over to the lady there? Well, I'll use this thing, but all you got to do, put your button there. Boom, boom, ba boom, ba boom. Okay. Oh, wow. Is that a yes? Thank you very much. You're welcome. And you walk out of there liking people. You walk out of there going, oh, that's a nice guy there. And those are nice people there. And it's a nice airline. Ain't that what you want to feel? Isn't that how you want to feel when you know when you're traveling? How many times have we been in an airport and you've seen somebody? It's happened a number of times with me. I've seen someone screaming at someone behind a ticket counter. I mean, just losing it, just ready to tear their hair out, ready to just beat someone senseless, beat somebody bloody because they missed their flight. And that was the only time I ever did see Chris Matthews arrested. But I'll tell you, I'm kidding.
Did he really do that?
I'm kidding. No, I didn't. Never saw him do that. So it's not a very comfortable experience to begin with, except with certain airlines that I won't mention again, unless you think I'm getting paid to say it. Although I wouldn't mind being paid to say it, but that would be called a commercial sponsorship or buying airtime, and then I would say it, and I would be getting paid to say it, and it would be logged as such. Anyway, pilot distraction has drawn attention from government safety officials who worry the phenomenon can have deadly results. The NTSB has examined the possibility that distraction contributed to a Pinnacle Airlines crash in February near Buffalo, where 50 people were killed. Overshooting an airport is extremely worrisome because the pilots must have missed repeated calls from air traffic controllers on their headsets, said John Nance, a retired Air Force and commercial airline pilot with 40 years of flying, who runs a Seattle aviation consulting firm under his name. The Wall Street Journal reported that pilots may have fallen asleep. The safety board doesn't have any evidence of that yet, according to the NTSB. But this was just a speculation by the Wall Street Journal. The flight from San Diego on an Airbus A320, man, that ain't small, overshot the Minneapolis airport and flew over Wisconsin before turning around and heading back to its destination, according to Houston-based flight tracking service FlightAware.com. Man, the flight Northwest 188 landed at 8:54 p.m., according to FlightAware.com. The plane passed the Minneapolis airport at 7:58 local time and didn't reestablish communications with air traffic controllers until 8:14, 16 minutes later. The Minneapolis-St. Paul airport officials were so concerned they dispatched police to meet the plane when it landed and to make sure there was no one on board that caused the problem. The plane was carrying 144 passengers and 5 crew members, according to a spokesman for Delta. The pilots have been relieved from flying until the NTSB and Delta complete investigations. Lander said in an emailed statement, Delta won't comment further on what happened. And it's a big, fat black eye for Delta, and it's just one more bad story about Northwest Airlines. And it sounds to me like there's some people in the airline business that ought to get out of the airline business. You want, honest to God, just get out of the business. Well, you know, we can't afford it because aren't you a little tired, folks, of hearing the following collection of statements? Aren't you just a little weary? Because if you hear them enough times, you're supposed to say this. I don't know how many of us do say this, but you're supposed to say the following. When you hear this, when you hear, I can't do it, the taxes by the government, I'll never be able to be competitive. Or when you hear, cost of fuel is so high that I can't, I understand the cost of fuel is high, man. I know that there's a lot of taxes, baby. Join the club. Welcome to the world. What do you want me to say to you? You got a better way to do things? Let me ask you this. If I was living in old ancient Rome or in Nazi Germany or in the communist system or in some country where it was quite obvious there is graft and corruption at the highest levels, I mean, to the point, seriously, where it impacts anything getting done, where there is a totalitarian regime where no one can weigh in on anything, I'd understand criticism like that. But when you're living in a system and working within a system that is, quite frankly, the best that's ever been developed, and we still have excuses that are like this. I can't do it because of that. I can't do the, you know, all you're telling me, man, is stuff that I got to face, too. I don't have any sympathy for you. I own two businesses in the middle of a recession. Is it easy? No, it's not. Am I blaming anybody if I have a lousy month? Yeah, me. Am I talking about the government taking out of my ass to the tune where he's going to shut me down? No, I understand what's going on, okay? Maybe there are reasons why it shouldn't have happened, and I know what those reasons are. I have my own personal opinions, and certainly I'll vote the way I want to vote when it comes time to solving those problems. But for now, I'm in the business that I'm in because I know what I'm doing. I'm just going to tough it out. If you guys don't know what you're doing, like Delta Airlines, Northwest Airlines, or any of you other schmucks that fly airplanes for a living and carry people around, and you can't hire pilots that know which airport to land at, and you're providing the service that you're providing, and you know, and I know, and everybody knows, it's despicable. Some of this, you know it as well as I do, that some of this service that we get from these airlines, at the prices we're paying, I don't give a damn how much fuel costs you. It's an absolute disgrace. It's an outrage. Now you got a couple of guys that are arguing in the cockpit, man, and they don't even know where the hell they are, man. They might have been flying over the Atlantic Ocean. By the time they got done with their little love fest, whatever they were doing in that cockpit, if you'll pardon the expression, they might have been over Greenland. Do everybody a favor. Quit telling us about how much fuel costs. We put gas in our cars. We know. Do everybody else a big favor. Have a nice big fat smile on your face no matter how tired you are and how much the people on the plane are just this and that and how much and how what a layover you had and a quick turnaround and all of this. I said to a woman, I swear, maybe I shouldn't have done this. I was in an airport. When was it? 2-3 years ago. Very crowded. The gate was crowded. And she was directing people to another gate. We were all customers of a certain airline. And she said the following thing. She said, ladies and gentlemen that are boarding flight such and such for, the Belgian Congo, please move over to gate number 16. Move over to gate 16. Move over to gate 16. Like that, right? So I walked over to her. I said, you know what? You're going to have to find a better way to talk to your customers. Because we're all tired. We all have to fly on the plane tonight, and nobody's appreciating you moving everybody like it's a cattle drive. And she looked at me like, how dare you? You know, you're talking to me, the person with the little pin with the wings on it, and I've got the microphone and everything, and look at the way you're talking to me. I said, yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, I don't care anymore. I don't care if I get on your stinking plane tonight, man. I'll walk home the way I'm feeling. Flying's great, though, isn't it? I'm going to take some flying lessons. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get myself one of them hot air balloons, and I'm going to put Bud in the bucket of it.
No, you're right, like the kid that was hiding away from everybody.
No, only you won't be hiding. I'm going to tie you up and stick you in one of those balloons and cut it loose, and wherever it comes down, it'll be a new world record, I'm sure. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show here. Coming up, President Obama publicly reacts to the feud with Fox News, and later on in the show tonight, we have Professor Ron Tarner, or it's Dr. Ron Tarner, right?
Yeah, the observatory.
Yeah, from the Mountain Meadow.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Dr. Ron Tarner tonight at midnight on Americans and their decreasing embrace of the global warming theories. That's coming up later on, midnight, 3 a.m. Eastern, on the world-famous, groundbreaking Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Lesbian, lesbian, your mom's a lesbian.
World famous Phil Henry Show.
And on our website, philhenryshow.com, you can watch live streaming video every night of the show. All you have to do is go to philhenryshow.com and watch the show right now. If you miss the show and you're just listening to the show, you can watch it on demand anytime you want. We keep the video archives up for 5 days, and our audio archives stay up forever. So you can listen to the show by downloading it, or you can just go to the site and listen to them. They go back literally for years and years and years and years and years. On our website, that's philhenryshow.com. You also can follow us on facebook.com/philhenry and twitter.com/realphilhenry. And the reason why we call it Real Phil Henry is why, bud?
Well, there are a lot of fake Phil Henrys that wanted to be you, and then they did, and then they made one up.
Yeah. Yeah, they got another a guy call himself Phil Henry.
Well, that's me. I call myself Phil Henry, but there's other people that call themselves Phil Henry, right?
Yeah, well, one guy called himself, you know, the Phil Henry Show.
No, didn't call himself. He called the site the Phil Henry Show.
No, he called himself.
No, that was his name.
His name was the Phil Henry Show.
No, that is the name of the Twitter.
That's what I'm saying. That ain't his name. That's just the name of his Twitter page?
Yeah, but now you own it.
Get out of here. Where do you...
Well, you do.
Now I don't own it, man. It's like we registered it. All right, we got news here about Obama, and he's not losing sleep over the Fox News beef. Now, there's been a lot of people who've said to me, when are you going to stop licking his you-know-what, Phil? What is it with you and Obama? Like, it's unnatural, or I'm not joining the club, that I, you know, I'm not criticizing Obama like everybody. Like, what's the matter? Am I not joining the club? Am I not, you know, would you feel more comfortable if I was all in with everybody on Obama? You know, people who don't like Obama, they don't have to like him. I mean, if I ask you why, then I'd like very, very much, I'd appreciate it very, very much if you could stick to the point as to why you don't like him. And if you call him a liar, I'm really going to hold your feet to the fire and ask you why he's a, quote, liar and what that word liar means. The other thing that I'm going to ask you is, what do you think a president does? I mean, I'm going to have a lot of very pressing questions so that when someone says to me that they don't like Obama, I mean, we could even do the full hour here. If you want to call up and tell me why you don't like Obama and you're not afraid of me blasting holes in your theories or your belief system or your philosophy, if you're not afraid of me pulling out the old 12-gauge and going ahead and firing away, then let's do it, man. 877-876-PHIL, why don't you like Obama? And if you use the word Marxist-Leninist, you're going to have to... No, I'm not even going to allow anybody to use Marxist-Leninism. That's not even... And I don't care if you can define it, because that is one of those little phrases that people use in order that they create this emotional response in people. Define him... If you believe him to be a Marxist-Leninist as to his policy, just don't use the term. If you don't like Barack Obama, and I understand, and I know that if I don't, you know, go along with everybody, that makes me, you know, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. There's an interesting phrase, isn't it? Isn't that an interesting? When you listen to people say you're drinking the Kool-Aid, you're either listening to a progressive or a conservative. Because both sides use the same term, drinking the Kool-Aid. If you're a liberal, you tell people that they're drinking the Kool-Aid if they listen to Bill O'Reilly. If you're a conservative, you tell people that they're drinking the Kool-Aid if they like Obama. Everybody's drinking the Kool-Aid. In other words, nobody is thinking for themselves. That's what the statement is. No one's actually being an independent thinker. I've yet to find an independent thinker. I shouldn't say I've yet to find, but it's like looking for a needle in a haystack, man, looking for somebody who's truly an independent thinker around here. Because when I listen to people tell me they don't like Barack Obama and I ask them why, they can't answer the question. And they sure as hell don't want to hear anything about economic theory, economic history, American history, world history. They damn sure, if they're white, don't want to hear anything about the history of African Americans in this country. And if they're black, they don't know what the slave master mentality means, which we brought up last night on the show. So you go ahead. We can do about a half hour of that. And then we have Dr. Ron Turner coming up at the top of the hour. Now, I wanted to mention one other story. I don't even think I'm going to have enough time now to talk about this, because it was a story having to do with an airline and a story about flying on an airline. Well, I got a few seconds. I was sitting just close enough to a flight attendant on a flight home from New York once where I heard her talking to a fellow passenger or a fellow employee, someone who was sitting in first class and who obviously was on a turnaround, about how they didn't make enough money, how they had someone almost break into the cockpit one flight, how they might go out on strike, right? And I could hear this, and my wife was getting irritated with it, so I literally had to call this flight attendant over to me under the guise of wanting chewing gum, and I said, you know, we can hear everything you're saying. And she had her eyes bugged out at me, and I said, do you want me to tell somebody higher on the food chain, or will this be enough? She said, no, this is enough, sir. Thank you. And gave me her phone number, and I was divorced a year later. Now, I'm kidding.
Really?
No, I'm kidding. We'll be back. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil
Bye.
Hendry.
Bye.
Bye, Mr. Hendry.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Coming up, we have Dr. Ron Tarner at the top of the hour. Dr. Tarner will talk about the fact that in a recent poll, the number of Americans who believe there is solid evidence that the Earth is warming because of pollution is at its lowest point in 3 years. Lowest point. The poll of 1,500 adults by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press found that only 57% believe there is strong scientific evidence. That's down from 77%. 3 years ago, and I personally believe that science only has itself to blame, although I qualify that. We'll have Dr. Tarner on to speak specifically to it. He's disappointed in that number, and we'll comment. We also have the question out. It's just a general question because I think the time has come, what with the popularity poll of Obama. And, you know, these polls, you really don't need me to tell you, do you, that popularity polls may be important to some people. I'm not really sure what they mean. I know they can be a general indicator as to how well people think a president's doing. But then we have that really tricky and sticky problem. And here's the problem. And I'm not talking about Obama now. I could be talking about Bush, but I'm not talking about Bush. Just any president. Presidents are not elected to be like in the old days when we were disc jockeys, we had a request line, you know, and we'd say, if you got a request, give us a call and we'll take your request and play it. Right? I think people think presidents are the same thing. Here's your request line number, call in. I don't want you to do, okay. And he takes the request and he acts on it. That's not what presidents have ever been elected to do. Never. Many times the American people send a message, yes. And they have the right candidate to articulate that message. And they send that candidate to the White House to get a thing done. What's an example of that? I believe that with the election of Ronald Reagan, it was a very clear message by the American people, enough with the taxes. Enough, enough, enough. Bang, he got in there, he cut taxes. Very specific job. What was the specific job that we sent George Bush to take care of? What was the specific job that we sent Barack Obama to take care of? Tell me the specific overriding job that we elected George Bush Sr. to take care of. And what was the specific job that we had Jimmy Carter take care of for us when we elected him president of the United States? I dare say we can't really say. All we know is we have a sense of these men that they will be good presidents, that they'll be good leaders, and that they'll help the country out of the problems that it faces. And that's why we elect them. To essentially use their wits, their intelligence, their political suave-faire, their vision, and go to work. Now, it may make us nervous. It may make us wet our pants. We may be really angry because he's not doing this when we think he should do that. You know as well as I do that that's all Monday morning quarterbacking. And really, that's what's happening with Barack Obama right now. There are three tracks upon which presidents ride when it comes to popular opinion. Number one, their base of support, people who say, we elected this guy to do a job to get the country turned around. I have faith that he will do it. I'm going to watch the things that he does do, and I'm going to be mindful of what it is I support and what I don't support, but I'm not necessarily going to be micromanaging and second-guessing everything that he does. I want to see the overall. The number two track are the ideological opponents of any president that does not represent their political party or their political movement. No one in the conservative movement is ever going to like Barack Obama. no one in the Republican Party, save a few, are ever going to like Barack Obama. They can't like Barack Obama because if they did like Barack Obama, they would lose their identities as conservatives or conservative Republicans. The third track is the most common track, and that is the reactive, emotional nature of the everyday American. One day he's feeling good, the next day he's feeling bad. One day he's got confidence, the next day he doesn't. He's like a pincushion or a puppet on a string. With everything that a president does, he reacts, he jumps this way, he jumps that way. Just like a marionette that we see, they kind of jerk this way and their arm flings up that way, like in, Team America.
Yeah, that was a great movie when the puppet throwed up and everything.
Yeah, you were in that, wouldn't you?
Yes, I was in it. I was a voice in it, but that's, I'm not talking about that. And political polls, popular polls, opinion polls, reflect that and track that better than anything. All you have to do is look back on the Iraq War. One day, we were all against it. The next day, when we realized that we were having some success with the surge, suddenly people thought, hey, maybe we're going to win this thing, and public opinion changed. It wasn't public opinion that dictated the surge. There were no people out there saying, let's get a bunch of troops and kick some ass. There are a bunch of people saying, everything sucks in Iraq. We don't like what's going on over there. That's it. That's all that was said. That was the message of the polls. It took a president to decide to make a move that would change the minds of the American people so that he could see through the vision that he had for his foreign policy and his defense policy. And that's why the surge came about. You cannot tell me. No one is going to be able to tell me, and you know it's true yourself, that the American people didn't, with a resounding voice, say to President Bush, let's get a surge going, let's kick a lot of ass. It just didn't happen. In fact, Bush inaugurated the surge in the middle of perhaps the most virulent period when it came to the anti-war sentiment in this country. He was going against, you talk about swimming against the tide. That's what great presidents do. Now, I ain't saying Obama's a great president. I think he's got the capability. But I also know that I am not an ideologue, and I don't care what public opinion polls say. I'm waiting to see what this man can get done based upon what it was that he said he was going to do. I'm not going to blame things on him necessarily, nor am I going to pretend that I am Kenneth Galbraith, the greatest economist in the world, and I just know for a fact that all of this spending that we're doing can only lead to disaster, because I happen to know that after World War II, we had record deficits, and we were able to dig ourselves out of those deficits, and why? We had a war to fight. In other words, we had something important that had to get done, if you want to put it another way. So we went and we did it, and then we dealt with the deficits. That is the message of one of our founding fathers, Alexander Hamilton, when he said, we must create debt. We simply must. That's how you prove that you're creditworthy. I know it's a strange way of thinking, but that was, as I say, a man who lived over 200 years ago. Now, the question that was out there was the following question. Why don't you like Barack Obama? Because I know there's thousands of you out there. You don't like Barack Obama. Why? And no, it's not going to be good enough to say he's a Marxist-Leninist. That's not going to be good enough. I mean, you can call him that, but you better damn well tell me what it is he's doing. And you see, I haven't heard any criticism of him yet that is, in my opinion, grounded in reality. So that's the question that's out there right now. 877-876-PHIL. And like I said, if you want to call in and tell me why you don't like the guy, you can do that. But be sure to know that I'm going to ask you questions and point out where I believe you're not thinking clearly, okay? Here is John in Boston. John, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. What can we do for you, sir?
Hi, Phil. Nice to talk to you since I listen to you every morning on the way to work.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, sir.
I would just like to know, he seems like he's got one issue that he's always working on, and it's health care, and that seems to be pretty stagnant now. They passed the Finance Committee bill. But what bothers me is every day I open up the newspaper, and I see more Americans getting killed. and the generals are telling about the surge, and he just, why isn't he doing anything about it? That's what I'm.
Now, did you all of a sudden decide that you didn't like Barack Obama because he wasn't doing anything about Afghanistan, or have you been pretty consistently?
I don't dislike anybody. I'm just some of his policies.
You know what I mean. You know what I'm talking about. If somebody were taking a poll, you know, and saying, do you support the president, don't you? We got a lot of people that don't support him, I guess is what I'm saying. Is that, would you put yourself in that category or not?
Because he was elected, but I just don't like seeing Americans getting killed every day. The generals are telling him he needs a surge, and he's wishy-washy about it.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. The generals didn't all say that this surge thing all of a sudden that these guys all think that is a brilliant thing. The original assessment in Afghanistan was that a surge wouldn't work in Afghanistan. If you recall, the general who was commanding there said, no, we can't use that philosophy. We can't use that strategy in Afghanistan. That may work in Iraq. It's not going to work here.
Well, we got to do something to save American life.
Well, I agree with you, and I may even agree with you that Obama's taken too much time deciding something. But let me ask you this:
that's how I feel.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this: if after the president decides on a policy that becomes a winning strategy, and we're able to actually secure Afghanistan, how many people do you think are going to say, well, it's better that he took his time because we came up with a plan that could be executed as close as possible and with a chance of success? How many people are actually going to say that? Or are they going to say, you know, he took too much time. Look at all the guys that died anyway. And plus, it isn't even his plan. It was the general's plan. In other words, can he ever win, man? You know, is he ever going to be able to win?
I understand what you're saying. He's like in a catch-22, but I just wish he would put more. I'm not a very political person, okay? I'm 57. I think I voted in 3 elections. But I just wish he would put more effort into Afghanistan and make some kind of solid decision of either we're in, we're out. I just think he's very wishy-washy on that. And
I agree. I mean, I put this comment up on Facebook today. I said, the object is to kill Al-Qaeda and Taliban, which is about as tough a call as killing Nazis. So what's the holdup, you know? And everybody weighed in saying, yeah, what is the holdup? I mean, this isn't brain surgery. But the thing of it is, in military planning, you got all of these guys, and they got all of these plans, and they're sure that this is the one, and they're certain that this is going to work. And the one thing that the civilian populace doesn't understand is military planning is almost like launching a ship or launching a mission to the moon. There are a lot of screw ups and there's a lot of mistakes before you actually get the plan that works. And with every mistake and every screw up, people are looking at that and looking at the number of men that were killed and saying, look at this war is just, it's going south. That's just not the way that military planning and operational planning and the actual execution of something happens. But John, thank you very much for your phone call. In other words, how can I get, like, World War II? I mean, let's use an example everybody understands. There was a thing called Market Garden. You guys ever heard of it? Well, it was a disaster. It was a disaster. We were going to go into Germany, cross the Rhine going through the Netherlands. We were going to cross the Rhine River going through the Netherlands, going through Holland. It was an utter and complete disaster. We lost a lot of people, the paratroopers. And we had to go back to square one. Now, if Obama had been president at the time, okay, and we had this generation of Americans, oh, we've lost the damn war. Look what he did, man. He just butchered the whole thing. Well, it really wasn't even his plan. It was Montgomery's plan. But the fact is, you can look at that war and you can see one bad idea after the next. For instance, everybody talks about D-Day being such a fantastic thing. Well, yeah, but the fact of it is, D-Day could have been an unmitigated disaster. It could have been a bloodbath. We had paratroopers dropping in places they weren't supposed to drop. There was no effectiveness for the air cover. I mean, they didn't take out any of those pillboxes. They didn't take out any of those guns. Guys were getting mowed down on the beach by machine guns that were supposed to have been taken out by the naval forces and by the air, and they didn't do it. They didn't. So the air cover didn't work. The paratroopers were dropped where they weren't supposed to be dropped. We had cats dying by the bushel on the beach. And everybody says it was such a fantastic operation. Yes, it was. There were a lot of brave people. And there were a lot of very smart people. There were a lot of people who were improvising plans. And they made it work. But the actual plan itself? Forget it. Everybody says that for instance, the United States and Great Britain and Canada, man, we kicked ass. We right across the plains of Europe, and we went right on into Berlin. We went across the Elbe River. Everything's beautiful. Well, the fact of the matter is, we killed a lot of men in Operation Cobra. They dropped bombs. Friendly fire killed a lot of Americans and Canadians and British because they couldn't scope the targets as well as they can now. We had all kinds of bombs. We were supposed to carpet bomb, and this was the first actual use of carpet bombing in warfare. Carpet bomb a path for our troops through the German army in France. And we bombed the hell out of the Germans. I mean, it was a Dante's nightmare vision of hell. But we also killed hundreds of Americans and British and Canadians because they couldn't target the bombs properly. They had to start over again and do it again. And the second time, friendly fire killed a bunch of guys. But what they did do is carpet bomb the hell out of the Germans to the point where they cut them in half and they basically were able to get through them. But we blew it. We blew it. If we'd listened to Patton, we could have encircled the German army. We could have taken them out in France, and there wouldn't have been near the resistance that we encountered in Germany. Does anybody remember that? Does anybody talk about that? Does anybody realize that that was a failure? It was a massive failure. We won the damn war. So when we sit here and we micromanage a war from thousands of miles away by way of newspaper and talk radio, it must drive the people in Afghanistan. Well, if I were them, I wouldn't listen to anybody other than, you know, the direct commander above me. You can't. It would drive you out of your mind. American people don't know. We don't know what's going on over there. One lesson we should learn of history. And if we don't learn any other lesson when it comes to fighting a war, we need to learn this. Number one, there's all kinds of ideas, and about half of them go south real fast, and people get killed, and you have to reload, and you have to start again, and you have to think of something else, and you got to keep trying. It's like everything else in life. And if we don't have the stomach for that, then we don't have the stomach for warfare. And if we don't have the stomach for that, then we can go ahead and, you know, we can just kind of leave tomorrow, man, the last guy out, take the flag or whatever you want to say. But that's just the way it is. And I know that we use that little, that convenient little political excuse of, well, have you ever fought in a war? You don't understand how hellish it is. I can only imagine. But I'm an American, and I recognize the need for it, and I support it, and I'm willing to vote for it with my taxes and my big fat mouth. And anything else they need from Phil Hendry, they got. Just all you got to do is call me up and ask me. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry. What do you got?
Well, I was wondering, you get a couple bucks? Because I want to get a Coke.
No, I don't have it. What do you mean?
Well, you said I asked you.
There's change on the counter. Get out of here. Ha, 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 ha. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous, groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show coming back. Dr. Ron Tarner at the top of the hour on global warming.
Phil Hendry.
Otherwise known as
Captain Cajones.
Phil here at a groundbreaking world famous Phil Hendry Show. And if, by the way, you hear a couple of jokes on MSNBC about Contessa Brewer not knowing the difference between black people, you already heard that material worked pretty heavy here last night. Nice going, guys. Wow.
Yeah, they're day late in the dollar short.
Thanks a lot, Porky.
Yeah, you sound like Porky Pig, man.
No, I don't.
Anyway, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over here to Greg in Virginia. Greg, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. What can we do for you?
Hey, Phil. Thanks for taking the call.
Yes, sir.
My problem with Barack Obama was, I don't know if you've seen it or heard it. It was an interview he gave on public radio a few years before he became president about his views of the Constitution, and where he views the Constitution as a charter of negative liberties, whereby the Constitution, rightly so, constrains the national government from becoming a tyrant. He sees the Constitution that it should enumerate rights, that it should enumerate responsibilities the government should provide the people.
No, well, no, I read that. No. I read that interview, and I'm sorry, I didn't get that interpretation at all. What I got from that, I read the interview, and what I got from that was the following. While the Constitution articulates constraints, it frees up the government and private citizens to act in a positive way. So when you talk about negative liberties, the Constitution, in other words, is a charter of those negative liberties that you're talking about, of these constraints. It provides a pathway of freedom for government and individuals. And really, what is government but the people, for the people to be proactive and positive? It does say what it can't. It does say what it can't do. But in like anything in life, Greg, if I pull back the string on a bow and arrow, I'm pulling the string back in order to make the arrow go forward. So if the Constitution is saying, here's what government may not do, and here is how it is set up, and here is how it's structured, it inherently is saying, here is what is allowed.
So that's why we're ending
so
up...
What?
Now we have a federal government that is devouring everything, and we have trillions of debt that we'll never get out from under.
You know, I've tried to explain this in the past, and I don't know. I haven't talked to you, so I'm not talking about you specifically, Greg. But I how did we go from? Is that music that I'm hearing? What is that? I'm hearing music. I gotta go, Greg.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, Greg.
Okay, thanks.
I love you, Greg. Call me back tomorrow night, man. Phil Henry Show. I heard music.
Yeah, we gotta go.
We'll be back with Dr. Ron Tarner, world famous Phil Henry Show. All right.
Phil Henry.
I wanted to answer the guy's question.
Learn more at talkradionetwork.com.